I want to thank all of you for what you've done this week, for the food, and for the rest of the week, of course, my last time to speak. So I just want to thank all of you for everything you've done this week. And I especially want to thank all of you for what you do for us all year. It's incredible to look on those support lists they send us and see the same name. I've seen some of the same names since I started being supported years ago, 10 years ago or more. And so I really do appreciate it. And I meant what I said the other day. It embarrasses me to see you sending your money to me. I don't do anything for you. I rob this church. I give nothing to you. All the ministry I do for other people. You receive nothing from me, and yet you support me, and it embarrasses me in a way, and I feel very humbled by it, and I'm very, very grateful. You should be giving that money to your elders, but they have a vision of seeing souls saved. They have a vision of seeing reward later, and so I'm very thankful. I really am. I'm very grateful, and that doesn't mean much. And if you think that me saying thank you is worth you giving your money to me, then you don't have many brains in your head. My thanks isn't worth anything. And if that's what you're shooting for, if you're looking for me to be thankful or for Brother Lindell to be thankful and pat you on the back and say good work, well, hey, if that's what you're looking for, well, then you just let us know. We'll do it and you'll have your reward, right? But man, if I was you, I would hold out because, you know, there's someone's coming in the clouds. And his pat on the back is going to be worth a whole lot more. A whole lot more. And I would hold out for him. I'd hold out for him. My wife always tells me that I wasn't I'm not normal, but she says I wasn't a normal child growing up. And besides what all these smart alecks are saying, she's referring to because I sometimes say I don't understand why youth do what they do. And I really don't. I don't understand a lot of things. I don't feel that I'm any way qualified to teach youth classes or give youth meetings because I don't have a clue why they do what they do. I wasn't like that growing up. I was very different from what I see now, in some ways. I had no interest ever in anything besides preaching. That was the only interest I ever had growing up. I never once considered moving to the States, thought about coming up here and doing it. It did not interest me. It didn't call me. And I fought back a lot on that why and concern, because I have two sons now and I would like somehow to instill that in them. And I don't have all the answers or anything, but I will tell you one thing. I can't remember ever feeling any call to anything. I'm serious. People ask me in the church. We got men in the church now. And because I'm the one that won them and taught them, well, they think I have all the answers, and I don't have hardly any answers. But they come up to me and ask me, what does it feel like? How do you know if you're called? I don't know. I don't know if I ever was called. I'm serious. Now, the brothers are right now thinking, well, we better take his picture down off the wall. But I'm serious. I have no idea. Maybe, I have no clue. And if you come to me asking, basically what I did is I wasn't waiting for God to tell me what to do. I did what I thought I want to do, what I thought I should do. And if he didn't want me to do it, he's going to have to tell me to stop. And he never told me to stop, and so I just kept doing it. And that's basically what I did. Now, a lot of other people told me to stop some things. For instance, you know, after about 6 or 7 years, they said, Michael, stop singing. And so I did. That's why I don't clap when I sing. For a while there, I thought that was my calling. Oh, boy. I'm not sure about the call, how it feels or anything, but I do know, and I knew from the time I moved to Mexico, time I was 8 years old, moved to Mexico, there was nothing else that mattered. There's nothing else that was going to make any difference in my life. There's nothing. That was it. So I never thought of anything else. And to me, it was very odd. You know, people would come down and visit us, and then they would leave. And I never understood why anybody would ever leave. No, I'm serious. I remember my grandparents, my dad's parents, coming down to visit us. I thought for sure, I was convinced they come down, they see what it is to preach the gospel in Mexico, they'll never leave. And they did, and it blew my mind. I could not understand why anybody would not want to be a part of that. Now I'm older and I understand a little bit more, but it still blows my mind. I'm serious. I still don't understand why we all just don't move to Mexico. I'm not too sure about Poland. You know, you want to go to Poland, that's fine, but move just, you know what I mean? And I understand we can't all go. I understand that completely, and I'm not trying to tell you all that you all should go. But I look at our church in Querétaro, and I look at the brothers and sisters there, and there's a few that don't preach in the streets. We have about, I'd guess it at about 75% of the men of the church preach in the streets, and I shoot for 60%. I feel that if we don't have 60% of the men preaching, then I was a failure. I feel I should somehow inspire them, kick them in the butt, whatever you have to do to get them, for them to want to street preach. And I don't go to their houses, I don't knock on their doors, I don't tell them personally they should be doing this, but I do preach very strongly about preaching in the streets and evangelizing, and I feel that the women should be doing things. So I'd say about 70% of the women are active in door knocking and passing out tracts and stuff like that. And so, but I look at the ones who aren't, and I don't understand why they're not. I mean, it has nothing to do with bringing people to the meeting. What else is there that matters? I mean, what are you going to do? What else are you going to do that really has any importance whatsoever? I get so tired. I have a lot of hobbies. I'm not up here telling you I only share the gospel. Come on, give me a break. I collect computers and all kinds of other junk, and Bill and I have projects like you wouldn't believe, all kinds of different things we're interested in. I like to program, and I like to do a lot of things. And I have all these, but you know, I look at the stuff I have, and it's worthless. And I look at my life outside of preaching the gospel, outside of giving Bible studies, outside of going to the meetings, and it is just worthless. I'm serious. It is just a useless life outside of that. And I thought, you know, why is it that when I was young, I was like that? And there's some things I just want to give before I get into a couple points I want to touch on. It's another subject. But to you young people, one of the reasons why I was like the way I wasn't weird. Well, I was weird, but not this way. It was because of the company I had. I surrounded myself, or was surrounded by my dad surrounded me by people like my Uncle Joe and Brother Billy and Brother Brent. And those were the people I was around. My grandfather. I mean, when I wasn't in school, I was with them. When they went to another city to pass out tracts at San Juan de los Lagos or Zapopan or wherever, I went with them. I mean, they were my friends. They didn't consider me their friend, I don't think. You know, I was a punk, or am. See, I still am a young person. But I surrounded myself with those kind of people, and I can't remember a name of a single person in any school I ever attended. I don't know anybody. I went back to Michigan. I was in kindergarten in Michigan before we moved to Mexico, and I went back when I was 13, and people would come up and say, "Michael, remember me?" No! I don't have a clue who they are. They didn't matter. They were zeros. The only people that mattered were preachers. The only people I had any interest in. And I surrounded myself with these kind of people, and the people you surround yourself with will make a difference in your life. You know, I have cousins in Michigan who are very much like me in their upbringing and in their character and their family life, very much like me, Christian, and yet their life is a whole different life, totally different. And you go back, and the only thing I can point to the difference is that when I was 8 years old, my dad took me down to Mexico and surrounded me by good people. Sometimes my dad, especially lately, I think he feels a little like he's not very useful because his back is not is bothering him. He can't do what he used to. He still does more than I can do, but you know, he still feels that way, and he feels maybe he, you know, not doing what he should be doing, but you know, despite any victories God may give him personally, I hope he still gives him many. I think that him taking me to Mexico was one of the best decisions he ever made. And I mean that. I would not have wanted to grow up anywhere else, or with any other people, because my life wouldn't be what it is today. Now, I can't take you young people out of your homes and take you down to Mexico or take you to Poland and give you that. But you can give yourself that, because there is a lot of men around this church who you could look up to instead of, you know, bubblegum rapper or whatever their names are lately. You know, go get yourself a haircut. Get yourself some decent clothes on. And get around people that actually matter. I look at we watch the All-Star game and the adulation they give Michael Jordan. Give me a break. He's the best there is ever at running up and down the basketball court endlessly. Whoopee. It is useless, man. Get some better heroes. Anyway, that's my little tidbit of advice. You take it as you want it. One of the brothers asked me why I only preach for about 20 minutes. And it's because I just don't have much to say. I'm sorry. I mean, I really don't, and I'm not deluded in it. I just know it, and so I just say what I have and then quit, you know. And so I just want to touch on a subject, and I've dealt with it both times I preached this week, and it's about reward, recompense. It's been something I've thought about a lot this year. I've taught a whole lot about it in Mexico, and so I really can't get away from it and when my thinking. So I just want to go through and touch on a few things about reward and about recompense. Look at Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6. I quoted the verse the other night, and I'm just going to read it again. We'll start from there. It says, "But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is the rewarder of them that diligently seek him." This is one of God's characteristics. God is a rewarder. You know, when I first started preaching this in Kedethra, I had some of the more zealous brothers come up to me and rebuke me for putting an emphasis on doing things for reward. But the scriptures are very clear about God's inherent desire to reward people. He wants to reward. He has promised to reward. He will reward everybody, not just the good. Look what it says in Hebrews 2:2. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 2. "For if the word spoken by angels was steadfast in every transgression and disobedience, received a just recompense of reward." The Bible uses this phrase, recompense of reward, three times throughout the book of Hebrews. And the book of Hebrews deals in a large degree with this subject of reward. And if you're ever discouraged, when I'm discouraged, I read the book of Hebrews. I love the book of Hebrews. When I'm discouraged, I read it, and it deals with, you know, pressing on, if you've gotten kind of trembly, your hands are falling, just stay in the path, and you'll be healed. Because along that path, there's going to be coming people, there'll be coming the Spirit of God, and if you're in the path, even though you don't feel too good or you're a little depressed, if you'll stay in the path, sooner or later you'll come out of it. You'll be healed. You'll be strengthened and you'll be able to continue. You get out of the path and there's no help for you. You know, people say, "I'm depressed, I'm not going to go to church." That's like saying, "I'm sick, I'm not going to go to the doctor." Well, that's just ridiculous. The more depressed you are, the more meetings you should attend. The earlier you should get here. Anyway, so if you're depressed, read the book of Hebrews. Anyway, the book of Hebrews touches that three times. Just a recompense of reward. And the first recompense of reward it deals with is a just recompense of reward. In other words, it's what you deserve. Now, a lot of us, we think that's a good thing. Just give me what I deserve. If God gives us this night what we deserve, hell will open its mouth and swallow us. But I'm saved. You deserve condemnation. And so do I. That is what we deserve. And we got all these people wandering around. That's the whole idiocy of this, I know you have them here, but we got this little sect in Mexico we call the impecables, the sinless people. They say they don't sin. Oh, give me a break. You don't sin. You mean you don't acknowledge your sin. You mean you don't count your sin. You mean you don't keep track of your sin, but don't give me that garbage. I don't sin. You know, Paul was very interesting. He was very similar. You read Paul's life and what he talked about, how he was before he was saved, according to the law, blameless. Yeah, right. Well, not counting those Christians I killed and not counting the... See, that's what they say. I don't sin. Well, maybe once a month. What are we talking about? You mean no sin. You know what Paul teaches? He says, you know, before, according to the law, I was blameless. But the moment I knew Jesus Christ, I'm the worst of sinners. And he actually got better. You imagine what he was before? You don't sin. These dummies that say this, they're completely ignorant. Like it says, they don't know what they're talking about, nor whereof they affirm. They don't have a clue what they're talking about. The moment when a person really gets saved, he really understands just how bad he really was. That's what Paul says. Before the law came, well, I was alive. But as soon as the law came, I died. The law says, look at this, and look at this, and look at this, and look at this. And every mouth, it says, shall be stopped just by the just demands of the law. And that's the just recompense of reward. Look, we're looking for reward. And yesterday, I saw a few little, you know, faces go across your, you know, glitter through your eyes, little like, ooh, and I said, I want God to owe me. I don't want you to misunderstand. I don't want God to owe me what I deserve. If God gives me what I deserve, I won't get reward, I won't get a crown, I won't get anything. And what I do have will be taken away. I'm not looking for my just desserts. I'm not looking for what I deserve. The just recompense of reward. If you're in this room tonight and you're not saved, and you say, well, I just want to go to judgment and God just to judge me justly. You big dummy. That's just stupid. This is what Paul gets down at the end, and he says, I don't want to be found having my own righteousness, which is of the law, but the righteousness of Jesus, of God, which is in Jesus Christ. I don't want God to come and find me trying my best to do good and trying my best to make up and cover and somehow clear up and clean up my life. I don't want God to come and judge me by what I deserve and give me what I've merited my entire existence. No way! Kill myself now! It'd be better! Look, if we're going to be judged by what we deserve, we ought to just kill ourselves tonight and not sin no more! Just do it now! I'm serious! And this is what we have in the book of Hebrews. It starts out and it talks about that there is a just recompense of reward. So, you know, when I'm talking about wanting to obtain reward, this isn't the reward we're looking for. This is the reward we're trying to avoid. And this is leads me to the next verse. So it deals with this, 10:35. He deals with another reward in chapter 10, verse 35. Cast not away therefore your confidence, which hath great recompense of reward. For you have need of patience after that ye have done the will of God, you might receive the promise. For this says, for yet a little while, and he that shall come will come and will not tarry. Now the just shall live by faith. But if any man draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him. But we are not of them who draw back unto perdition, but of them that believe to the saving of the soul. You know, we have a just recompense of reward, which we don't want. But there's a great recompense of reward. Now that's what we want. We want the great recompense of reward. You know, there's a lot of reasons why we could consider salvation a great recompense of reward. I just wrote a few down. One is the investment profit ratio of this recompense of reward. I mean, you invest a little bit of faith and you obtain eternal salvation. There is no bigger dividends. I mean, there is no investment that returns more than salvation. Nothing. You invest zero of yourself. You give God something completely useless, and He not only cleans your past sin, He creates in you a new creature, something that was never there before, and returns to you a real life. You give Him something that none of your neighbors are interested in. They want your Makita drill, but they don't want your life. They don't want you. They don't want your kids. They don't want your wife. They don't want anything about you. They may want your stuff, but that's it. God's willing to take what nobody, not even yourself, when you're really honest with yourself, want. Don't be, you know, if you're really honest, you look in the mirror and you're disgusted just like I am. And God takes that and will return to you something far greater, better, more than you can possibly ask for or even imagine of asking for. All things are made old, and all those things are passed away. All things are made new. 2 Corinthians, this is a tremendous, tremendous reward. This is a great, great recompense of reward. And if you're here tonight and you're not saved, this is what you need. You don't need religion, and you don't need good works, and you don't need any of this other stuff. You just need to find this great recompense of reward, which cometh by faith. It's not what you do. It's not who you are. It's not what church you go to. It's who you believe in. It's who you are going to be found in. It's what Paul says. When God comes back, I don't want to be found in my own righteousness. I don't want to be found being protected under the skirts of a priest or Mary. I want to be found having the righteousness which is of God, which is by faith in Jesus Christ. That's where I want to be found. And that is a great recompense of reward. Another reason why it's such a great recompense of reward is that, you know, it's such an unmerited recompense. You know, a lot of people don't understand why that's so. But, you know, we're always excited when we find something we don't deserve. I mean, you find a $20 bill on the sidewalk, and you're more excited about that than working and making $600 that week. What the hell? About $20? One of the brothers in Mexico, you know, we always find coins. There's coins laying all over around in Mexico. There's all over. And we don't pick them up. We just kind of, you know, tow them to see what they are. We don't pick them up because, see, one of the brothers, Brett, an American who lives in Mexico, that's another very interesting story, but he's down there, and he's an odd character. He gets along real well with me, I guess. But he figured it up. And if you could pick them up all day, every day, as fast as you couldn't pay for your back surgery. And yet there's some people down there that find these little worthless coins. They're worth less than washers. And they pick them up. I found a coin. Put that in my pocket. I remember I had a friend, a guy I knew, worked in Albertsons, and had a guy here in San Antonio, goes to all the Albertsons they had when they were open. They had a fresh or free policy. In other words, if you found anything that was past the expiration date, they gave you a good one. So he would go to every Albertsons and go through every shelf and every can and find all the past ones and bring them up, and then they'd give him fresh ones. And he was so excited about that. If he would have just worked those few hours, he could have bought them and had money left over. But see, that's how we are. We just love unmerited stuff, free stuff. That's why, you know, you always see free with the purchase of a car. And there's dummies who go. My son, Cole. Dad, look,
It's free. A free phone. You just got to buy that car. Free phone. Can I have the phone? Just buy the car. I'll keep the phone. That's the whole point of the lottery, right? Same thing. Well, this great recompense of reward, oh, it far outweighs any of this. It is great. Salvation is tremendous. It's incredible. If you're not saved, this is what you need. But another reason, just one last reason about this. It's great because it's incorruptible and it's irrevocable. It can never tarnish and it can never be taken away. There's nothing better. You know, it does. You may not, and I may not, receive much of a reward in heaven. And just so you know, I'm not taking a wheelbarrow to heaven for my crafts. I'm just hoping I got one for my head. You know, some people think I really, my family thinks I'm very arrogant and I have this idea that I'm going to go to heaven, you know, and you guys are all going to help carry them out. But I don't think that. I think my wife might get more just for putting up with me. And I really believe that. That's not just a joke. I'm serious. And you women, a lot of times you think that because the things you're called to do are thankless and anonymous means that they're worthless. But they're actually worth more. You read Jesus' principles on reward, and they're actually worth more. Because if you don't get rewarded here, he owes you. That's what I talked about the other night. If you aren't rewarded here, then he owes you. And he will make all things right. He is going to judge everyone, and he's going to pay back what is owed. And so the more anonymous it is, now I'm not talking about dumb junk. I'm talking about real work, real sacrifice, real faith, done with no reward is worth more. Anyway. But this salvation, no matter what your crowns may be or what your position in the kingdom may be, what your reward might be, salvation, this great, great reward, recompense of reward, can never, ever be taken away. And in that context, there is no male, there is no female, there is no servant, there is no free. We're all the same. We all are heirs of God, co-heirs with Jesus Christ. Now, the reason why it's a recompense of reward is because it is one merited by Jesus Christ. It's not because we have done something to deserve it. It's because 2,000 years ago, Jesus Christ won it for us. He went in to the house of a strong man. He kicked down the door. He tied him up, and he let us free. And it is a tremendously great recompense of reward. And if you're not saved, you need this. And if you don't have it, then all of God's justice and judgment will fall on you like the worm that you are, and you'll go to hell. And you may not believe that, but it really doesn't matter if you believe it. Just like the sun is going to come up in the morning, whether you like it or not. There's one more reward I would like to touch briefly. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 26. Speaking of Moses, it said, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of reward. There is a worthwhile recompense. There is a reward that is worth your time. I'm not talking about salvation. We're talking about beyond salvation. You don't have to go to the kingdom of Christ poor. Now, if you do, it's because you chose to. And there will be poor people. There will be people with less, and there will be people with more. Christ said that the first shall be last, and the last shall be first, and that he who had not had 10, and he got another 10, he's given 10 cities and so on, and that the one that had one and hid it and did nothing, even the little he had, will be taken away. Not everybody has the same. God is not a communist. I don't know what he is, but he's not a communist. And this reward is worth your... This is a worthy reward. This is what every one of us should be pressing toward. This should be the motivating factor in our lives. This should be the determining factor in our decisions. The reward of Jesus Christ. I'm not telling you not to own a boat. Own a boat. Invite me to go on your boat. Go fishing. Take me fishing. Definitely. I'm not telling you that Christianity is, you know, these sects who dress in white robes and give all their goods to the Holy Father or whoever and, you know, live on a rooftop waiting for the coming. No, of course not. Any of you who know me know that I don't think. But what I do think, and I wish I lived it more, but what I do think is that this reward that I'm talking about, this reward that Moses knew about, this reward that Abraham knew about, and all of the prophets, that reward is worth your time. And every decision we make should be impregnated by our desire to obtain that reward. Every decision we make. It is worth more than your family time. It's worth more than how much you want to live with your parents in the same city. It's worth more than that. It's worth more than your plan for a career. I have nothing against careers. Nothing at all. But the reward of Jesus Christ is far greater than any piece of paper you're going to nail on your wall that says you're a BA or an MD or a PhD or whatever else. It's worth more. It's worth more than any legal or civil repercussions that could ever come from following Jesus Christ. And there will be some. There will be people who will hate you from following Jesus. I have a lot of fun with them. This reward is worth more. Do you really think standing in the kingdom of Christ and he's handing out entire cities to rule that a little
piece of junk. You're going to say, well, you know, I don't got no cities, but
I sure did have a good computer.
You big idiot. A computer? A car? A boat? A house? I'm not telling you if you have these things, you have no reward. But I'm telling you is, don't live for these. They are not worth it. They are not worth it. Now, the reward of Jesus Christ, that's worth it. It really is worth it. It really is. In short, the reward of Jesus Christ is worth more than any and every sacrifice you'll ever make to obtain. That's what Paul says. That the sufferings at this present time do not compare with the glory that should be revealed in us. They don't even compare. You know, I know a lot of you have trouble. I don't come up here thinking, you bunch of rich, fat Americans. Oh, you are kind of rich and fat, but it's not what I think. You have troubles just like anybody else. No more, no less, I don't think. Perhaps a few less. But the reality is, you all have troubles in your life. You have disappointments, things that haven't gone the way you wish they would have gone. And you know, I understand in a way. I have disappointments in my life also. Things that if I could change, I would change. But despite all that, and in spite of all that, the reward that Jesus Christ is going to bring in His kingdom, it really is. It is worth those of you who have given offerings every month. I have nothing to repay you with. I have no illusions that what I'm telling you right now is in any way inspiring or motivational to you. And if it is, you need to examine. Give me a break. There's nothing I can say that can make it work. But Jesus Christ one day will make it. He will. Because when I say that I want God to owe me, this is not based upon what I think I deserve. It is based upon what He has promised to give. That's it. If God had not promised reward, how presumptuous we would be to even desire it, much less claim it. But God is the rewarder of those who diligently seek. You will follow God. He will reward you. Not because you deserve it. You don't deserve anything. But because He is good and righteous and kind and merciful, and He wants to reward your life. He wants to. If you'll just live for Him. And I'm telling you, I understand at the moment many times the sacrifices don't seem like they're worth it. I understand. And I have no proof. I have no crown in my pocket that I can pull out and say, look, I snuck one out. It's worth it. Look, it's real gold. Nothing. I have nothing to show you. But I have just what you have, and I've read just what you. And that's what God tells us in His Word, that He is the rewarder. His reward will be all. There will be no more memory. It says He'll wipe away all tears. There'll be no more memory of loss or suffering or affliction. Only joy, pleasure, authority, power. This is what He's offering, and it is real. Now, you have a decision tonight. You have a decision right now tonight. You can grasp a hold of the reality of the reward of Jesus. Go on living the way you still are, many of you, and end up a pauper. Now, that's your choice. Tonight, just like every other day of my life, I have to do the same thing. I have to make my decision also. One decision will not do it. You're going to have to get up every morning to make that decision. You have to drive to work every day and make that decision. You have to stand at that box and look down at your checkbook and your pen and make that decision. You're going to have to look at that map of the world. Many, some of you, and make that. A lot of times I forget that huge overcoming feeling I had when I was 8, wondering why anybody would not be completely and wholly involved in this. Because I get so sidetracked. But it's still there. It's still in me. It's still there. And I'm telling you, if you don't have it, you ought to get on your knees and ask God to make it all. Because there is a reward, and you need to diligently see.